doing?
I'm just taking a little constitutional before my next meeting. Did you ever get paid?
No.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, Beverly says the check's in the mail. Can I join you?
Sure.
I knew this Maasai from Tanzania, you know, he was here to run in the marathon. And he took everything about New York City in complete stride. You know, nothing fazed him until he saw a grown man following his dog and picking up his shit. And he started laughing so hard he wept.
I suppose that custom could seem strange, like out of context.
What was that?
I overheard your conversation about how like is a language prophylactic.
Yeah. Huh?
What is fictocritical anthropology anyway?
Well, it is a way of writing about anthropology that blends ethnographic observation, storytelling, and like theory. Do we have to walk in a circle or can we walk around the park?
We can walk. It's so hard to find a full-time position.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Travis Hobson of Cinema Royale, and you are tuned into In the Arena. Now, these are basically one-off shows where I get a chance to interview writers, directors, and actors of upcoming films. And this week, I'm joined by Rebecca Miller. You just heard a clip from her latest film, screwball comedy Maggie's Plan. Which I had a chance to see back at Sundance a few months ago. The film stars Ethan Hawke, Greta Gerwig, and Julianne Moore, along with a few others, Bill Hader, Maya Rudolph, Travis Fimmel, Wallace Shawn. And basically, it follows a 30-year-old woman, an academic played by Greta Gerwig, who wants to have a baby, but she falls into a romantic relationship with a married man, a novelist, played by Hawke, who is feeling unappreciated by his wife, a very successful woman, played by Julianne Moore. And things get pretty complicated from there. So I had a chance to talk with Miller about the film, her career, her marriage to Daniel Day-Lewis, and all sorts of different things. What is it in Hollywood today? We know how difficult that can be. So I had a chance to talk to her about all that stuff. And here is that interview. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks.
Doing?
Yo, Travis. Hi.
Yes. Hey. How's your tour going? Good?
Good, yeah. I think it's going well.
Yeah, I think so.
I get the feeling that it is.
Yeah, good. I saw the film a few months ago at Sundance.
Oh, you saw it at Sundance.
I saw it at Sundance. So it's been a little while for me since I've seen it.
Yeah,
but,
I still remember it.
Yeah. I still remember it. So how have you been liking the reaction to the film so far?
I mean, I've been pleased with the reactions of the film. The film has played well in very diverse kind of places, which was interesting. Like Berlin, where it played amazingly well in the Berlin Film Festival. And then Sundance, it played well. And then, you know, like Dallas, it just played really well. So it's kind of like a really, and so I thought that makes me hope. I mean, knows, but I hope that there are a lot of entry points for the film that people could enter and enjoy the film from a lot of different doors.
That's very interesting. I'm probably most surprised that it played well in Dallas.
Well, yeah,
it's like a very progressive sort of film to me. It does.
I think Dallas actually has quite an enthusiastic independent film crowd, which I didn't know about, which is why I was there.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has a progressive vibe, but you know. There must be progressive people in Dallas.
A few. A few in there somewhere. That's cool. All right, so this one is not based on one of your own novels. This is, where did this one come from?
Well, it's really based on some chapters from a book that at the time was unpublished by Karen Rinaldi, but will be published under the name of The End of Men, which it's going to come out in a year, I think.
It's an ominous title.
And what?
It's an ominous title.
It's ominous, right? Yeah, Men. I find it ominous, too. Anyway, that's the title. But there were some chapters in it. And she only sent me the chapter. I've never read the book. I've only read the chapters. And in those chapters, there was Maggie, John, and Georgette and the triangle and the basic switch. And, a lot of the sort of big story points were there. But then I had to build it out and – I added Tony and Felicia, and I added the Pickle Man, and I added really the the nuts and bolts of the plot, because they were, you know, it was not a whole story, so
right.
It wasn't built out that way. And I ended up changing Maggie's character quite a lot to become something that I could relate to more personally. And then I made them fictional anthropologists and things like that.
Okay. So what was it about those chapters that kind of attracted you and made you say, this could be a fuller, richer story? What was that tragedy?
I think that there was something about the switch, the basic hook of what happens, you know, when you realize your husband is perfect for his ex-wife, that I thought was perfect to try and make into kind of screwball romantic comedy, which is a form that I adore. Preston Sturges and, you know, Philadelphia Story and His Girl Friday and all those wonderful movies. And I thought it kind of lent itself to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like the idea of that very strong armature that I could then hang my personal style onto. And, you know, also, I felt like it was in the air, this whole thing. Like, only a year before, or 8 months before, Julianne and I had been having coffee, and she told me a story of a friend of hers who had left her husband in a cloud of romance for this other person who had a family. 5 years later, she finds herself doing nothing but organizing, like, ski vacations and, like, you know, school runs. And she's thinking, well, maybe I should have just talked with the other guy.
Right.
And you know, and it really made me think, because and it echoed that conversation. And then I thought, well, isn't that, maybe it's a very, very contemporary story.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, and I remember when I was watching it, and I was thinking back to one of your previous films, Kapili,
mm-hmm.
that there were, like, some similarities between her and Ethan Hawke, in a way. In the sense that, you know, they're both kind of living in the shadow of a spouse who's, you know, more famous, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you mean Pippa?
Is that something that's interesting to you, people living in that sort of situation?
Well, I mean, it's all dynamics. I'm just interested in dynamics of all kinds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have, here you have, I guess, John living in the shadow of a woman who's more successful than he is at this moment.
Right.
And then you have Maggie, who seems to be the person that's going to make his life possible by kind of nurturing, by being the gardener to his rose, right, and nurturing him.
Mm-hmm.
But then what interests me is how dynamics can shift.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, John becomes the person with the power and Georgette is trying to get him back.
Right.
And then there's also another time where, you know, so power shifts in movies are really interesting, even on a scene level. Like, for example, when Georgette has the bag of ashes and she returns his book and you start the scene coldly and she returns his book and it's like, where shall I scatter these? And then by the end of it, they're kissing, you know, and it's like, how do you get from there to there? I'm always interested in extreme shifts. You know, or how do you go from two women who are enemies to living together and saying, thank God it's Friday? And, like, how do you get to those extremes in two ends of a movie?
Do you feel that kind of shit happens in real relationships, that people, the power balance kind of ebbs and flows, I guess, over the course of a marriage or anything?
Well, I definitely think so. I think sort of like the wand of power is always being passed back and forth in a good marriage. I mean, I think that there's dominance. I mean, I think sometimes in a marriage there's somebody who tends to be dominant in some ways. But usually it's always like it's checks and balances in a good marriage. I think that there are changes.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, drama and life are two different things. Like, you know, in a way that it's, I think life tends to be a little bit more subtle and a little bit less decisive, because in a movie, especially a feature film, you have only so much time to create these situations. So they tend to be more acute. Whereas, you know, in life, sometimes changes can be more minuscule.
I was, you mentioned that you kind of looking to make more of a screwball type comedy with this one, and which I enjoyed those movies too. But there's real, you know, emotional heft to it as well, and you're exploring a lot of different themes, I think. Do you think it's easier for people to kind of take in those messages when you're putting it in a kind of wrapping it in a comedy like that?
Well, it's an interesting question. Like, you know, every movie you can look at in different slants. Like, this could have had its dramatic interpretation. You could have made this movie with the same plot.
It could have been a drama.
Very seriously, yes. And I just saw it in a comedic light. Mm-hmm. I don't even know, I have to admit, I'm not even sure that the chapters were necessarily completely comedic. Mm-hmm. They were funny to me. They were funny. And I think that having Karen's hook really enabled me to free me up and create this film in a way that I couldn't have done maybe by myself, or that it would have been harder to do with, I didn't have that wonderful present of her hook. But all my movies have had funny parts. You know what I mean? Like, Pippa has funny parts, mm-hmm. but it's just that proportionally it's less. So I decided when I made this movie, I'm going to flip it. I'm still going to have dramatic parts. I'm still going to have emotional past, as you put it, but I'm going to have it be proportionally less in the funny parts. Because I love it. I love hearing people laugh in my movies. Like, even Jack and Rose, which is a sadder film, there's funny parts. Like, you know, and I remember sitting in a screening of that movie actually years ago and thinking, oh, I love it when people laugh, and, you know, and being surprised at how many laughs there were in the movie actually. And thinking, you know, and also nowadays, I feel like comedy is such a civilizing force in a way, like a smart comedy, you know, like just to be able to laugh at ourselves and think, well, this is how we are, and aren't we ridiculous? And yet at the same time, think a little bit too. I think for me, I'm always looking for movies that are pleasurable, but still use my intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tried to make for this.
I was talking the other day with Lauren Scafaria for About the Meddler. And we were discussing how difficult it is to get a movie, these smaller movies with female directors that are very female centric, how difficult it is to get those movies made nowadays. Are you experiencing any sort of resistance or pushback or anything in regards to getting a movie like this even made?
This movie was one of the easier films I've ever had made. Mm-hmm. Partly because I feel that it has a kind of a populist vibe about it, but also because the cast that came together. I think that, you know, when you have female characters who do things that aren't obviously likable, and yet the challenge is them to create likable characters, mm-hmm. that's already a little subversive. That's already a little bit new. I mean, you know, and I definitely think that both Maggie and Georgette are those kind of characters. Mm-hmm. And with Maggie, I mean, I'm 100% sure that Greta Gerwig is the reason that Maggie works. Mm-hmm. You know, without her intelligence and innocence, that combination, in that sense that she really is doing everything for the best.
It kind of feels like a continuation of some of the characters she's played before in a way. Yeah.
There's definitely a quality that she has, but she also really created, I mean, like, her character in terms of her physicality, mm-hmm. The way that she moves her body is very much a character she created. Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about casting her and casting all of them, actually, because you got a really good cast in Ethan Hawke and Julianne Moore, of course, as well. How'd that all come together for you?
Well, I started really with Julianne and Greta. Julianne is a friend of mine, and I just thought she'd be great. I thought, why not start with Julianne? And I put it through her letterbox, and I think that she couldn't resist that snow scene where she said, are we going to die here? and Julianne's a very, very funny person. She's a natural comedian, and she doesn't get a chance to exercise that muscle too often. Mm-hmm. Greta, I met early in the process, and I just fell in love with her. She was just like, you know, by the end of the meeting, she and I both had a feeling like we just needed to work together. We had a lot in common. She was the perfect muse in a way. Like, she was just my girl, you know, and I felt that the minute I met her. She carries with her a kind of very contemporary vibe, but she's also a thoughtful, very smart person who never feels manipulative or any of the bad things that we associate with sort of intelligent people. Mm-hmm. She's just a, you know, she's also lovely and innocent and kind of goofy. And then all those things I thought really would help Maggie. And I think that, you know, I think they did, she did. And she also is a very profound performance. I mean, there's a lot of emotion in that performance. And, you know, to be sort of dissolved in tears and still have great comic timing is something that I think very few people can do. And I thought she was great.
Trying to take out a frame of what I was about to ask. When you're writing a screenplay for something like this or any of your movies in general, do you like to take, I imagine that you draw from your own personal experiences to some extent. Most writers do. I do. I don't write. But do you take input from like others as well? Like when you like the actors on set, do they help you?
Well, what I do is like my process is kind of like different for every movie. Usually, what I would do is start with the source and start to think about structure. Like in some cases, it's my own short story or my own novel. In this case, it's the chapters from the book. I start thinking about structure, about how to structure the thing so that first the characters need to be created. So there I'm just writing blindly. I'm just writing into the dark and so on. But because there was already a little bit of structure imposed because of the movie, I was able to work on character and structure simultaneously in a way that I usually have to wait for structure to appear from, you know, the characters. I start with character. I'm really obsessed with character, but also structure. So it's kind of like character structure, going back and forth. In this case, I talked a lot to Karen Rinaldi, the writer, about her motivations. Where do these characters come from? What were I, you know, and I would give her little jobs, like, why don't you figure out what degree exactly Maggie has? And she would go and she'd figure out exactly what degree Maggie has. It was great. And she loved doing that. She loved that. And she was wonderfully egoless about it because she's a publisher and she's a big, you know, has a huge job. She's a very successful woman. So for her, this is all gravy, and it was great. And so then I spoke to my casting director, Cindy Tolan, who's actually very good dramaturg and read the script many times early on. I spoke to Rachel Horowitz, one of the producers, who was helpful asking questions. You know, most of the things that people can do when you're so-called, quote-unquote, developing a movie, which is sort of weird, it's like, I don't know, whatever that means. I just call it writing, but anyway. Our questions, like, well, what about, what happened? Well, John's got to find out, right? I remember her saying that, like, early on, Rachel saying that. Julianne saying, I think we need to see her at work. Now that's the kind of question that's great. Okay, so then I create the auditorium scene, and all of a sudden that's great because it opens it up and you can really see her being an academic. You see the world, and you see them. What's fun about that is it's kind of classic, and it does remind me, although I can't think of exactly the movie, I think maybe, I don't know, like Adam's Rib or something, where you see the two people in a professional life, but they're really just having a fight.
Yeah.
And they're on the auditorium. They're in a panel. They're in front of an audience. They're talking about Fictive Critical, or no, they're talking about the fallout from Occupy movement. And meanwhile, what they're really just doing is having a marital disagreement. Yeah. And so you set that up and you know what their relationship. So that came from a question that Julianne had, right? Mm-hmm. So each time, and what I would do is, I worked for a whole year with Greta, too, and things like that. She's a Quaker. That was something that came between me and Greta. Neither of us can remember who said it, but we were like, she should have some kind of spiritual background because I thought that she's somebody who, her ethics are so front-loaded, so important to her,
yeah.
And that in some way it made sense that she would have that kind of background. And so we thought, okay, Quaker, that's good because they're really into good works. It's more than a spiritual, personal salvation. It's about helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also about listening to your, sitting in quiet and listening to
what comes up, what the truth is. And she's such a truthful person. She's trying to live truly. So that's an example of something that came up between us, became very much part of the bedrock of the character. So I just, there's a first pass. It's about just getting the film to work, making sure, because this kind of form does have certain requirements. It is a screwball romantic comedy. It has right. requirements, and you're looking at a tradition, and you want to live in that. And it's a great, one of our great American forms. I mean, so I want to honor that form. And so it's figuring that out, how to do that, but at the same time, create truth for all these characters so that they seem to be acting truly within this sort of slightly absurd framework.
I'm trying to be careful by words. So I remember a part in the movie where I think it's Julianne Moore's character makes a comment about people using the word like.
Oh no, that's actually
was it Greta?
That's John. John says like is a language condom.
Yes, was that something that was in the original story, or did
no.
you put in there?
No, I put most of the dialogue myself.
Funny.
Yeah, no, that was something I put in myself. Yeah.
So do you feel that way yourself? Is that something that you feel as a?
Well, yes. I mean, not that I don't. I don't use. I use like.
I think everybody does it by accident.
Everybody does, but it is funny because if you take it out, if you do just experiment with just taking it out of your sentences, all of your sentences sort of get stronger and more potent. It's almost like. It's almost as though you put a little. You're diluting language.
It's like wrapping it in saran wrap or something.
Yeah, it's somehow diluting it so that we don't really commit. Yeah. And in a way, it's a lack of commitment to language.
Yeah.
And so, in some funny way, it echoes some of the themes in the movie about where we are right now.
That was funny. So what are you thinking about doing next? Are you've done a screwball comedy now. Are you thinking about going back more towards dramatic or something else at this point?
Well, I'm trying to work out something, and I'm not sure what the balance is right now in terms of drama and comedy. There's definitely comic elements to the thing. I'm not sure if it's going to dominate or not. You know, that's where I'm like, does this dominate or what's the tone of this thing? Because in the end, tone is what directors really, that's the job of the directors to figure that out. And so I'm sort of still playing with it and seeing if I can make it work. So what I'm trying to write, yeah, and it's an original screenplay. It's not based on a story. So in a way, that makes it a little harder because nobody's done that work for me. So I have to kind of just like carve it out of the rock face.
So this is an original piece. That you
yeah.
Know. Okay. Would you ever consider, and this is the geek part of me coming out. Would you ever consider doing anything involving like a female superhero type thing? Was that something you would ever consider?
Well, you know what? I mean,
they're looking for female directors to direct a lot of female superhero movies now.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that. It's like, she'd be an interesting choice.
Well, I think it depends on. There's a part of, let's put it this way. There's a part of me that's really tempted to, for that learning curve, because I love learning. Mm-hmm. Like I'm kind of an eternal student.
Right? Very so different for you.
I love, and I would definitely learn a lot.
Yeah.
But what I would, how much I would suffer working inside of that kind of system, where really you're just partnering up with a studio and you're sort of servicing a story, and you would relinquish some of the stuff that I treasure, which is mm-hmm. artistic control. Mm-hmm. But you'd make a huge amount of money and you would also learn a huge amount probably in terms of, I don't know, many things about how films like that are made. So I never say never because like if, 10 years ago, if I was told I was going to be making a comedy of this kind, I don't think I would believe it because, it's not necessarily where I was at the time. And I think every movie or every piece of art that anyone makes, like when you write something, whatever, it's a self-portrait of you at that moment. I mean, even if it's not, I mean, obviously autobiographical, but I mean, in terms of my who I am at this moment, how I feel at this moment, I don't know in 10 or 5 or 10 years, I may be totally in a place where I want to make that kind of film and have that kind of experience. Right now, I sort of think I want to make probably a film that might have bigger scope, but has some of the same tone that right. this film has.
Another movie with Daniel, maybe?
We would love to do that. I mean, like, we're just sort of always looking for something. I don't think it'll be my next one, but we definitely have that in mind.
With Rebecca Miller, writer, director of Maggie's Plan. I hope you enjoyed it. Stick around later this week. We'll have another interview with the directors of Wiener, the documentary on disgraced politician Anthony Wiener. So stick around for that later in the week. I hope you enjoyed this. I'm Travis Austin, Cinema Royale. Thank you very much. Goodbye.